Previously on Dialogue Overseas, what's been your favorite place to travel within Cameroon?
I think probably the extreme north, because it's so different from the rest of the part, from the rest of Cameroon. So this is like up in Marwa, and then outside of Marwa there's Waza National Park with giraffes and elephants and stuff.
Waza National
Park. Waza, yeah, W-A-Z-A. That's also the place where last year the family of French... French family was kidnapped by it's right on the border with Nigeria, so they tend to tell you not to go up there.
Welcome to Dialogue Overseas. I am Julian.
And I'm Carolyn.
We are an American family living in Africa, specifically Cameroon. If you are following us for the first time, you can follow us on iTunes. Just type in Dialogue Overseas. And you can follow us on Facebook.com/Dialogue Overseas. Today we'll be discussing the missing Nigerian girls and its potential effect in Cameroon. Our colleague Patrick will join us to discuss Paul Biya's presidency. And we will respond to Facebook comments.
But first, our take.
We have a friend who works for us part-time who wants to have more children. She currently has a 6-year-old son, and since he was born, she's had at least 3 miscarriages. In her most recent miscarriage, she was carrying twins. Most of her miscarriages have occurred in her second trimester, but despite this, she's still trying to conceive. She and her husband have even recently gone to a local doctor where he prescribed an herb to both of them in hopes of carrying a baby to full term. So far, she's been unable to find full-time employment, and he is very likely to lose his job after next year. But they're still trying to have more children, because here in Cameroon, many take pride in the number of children they have. A local Cameroonian told me, "You're not a man until you have multiple children, and specifically, multiple sons. Having children is such a big deal that it's common for Cameroonian men not to propose to a woman unless she's able to prove that she can conceive first."
A friend of mine told me a story about a man from her village. Several years ago, this man defied custom and married a woman that he was in love with, despite having not being able to prove that she could conceive. Several years passed without his wife becoming pregnant. So his mother went and found him a new wife. He now has 2 wives. And
Playa.
Are you a player if your mother gives you a second wife?
It's okay with your mom.
So several months into his second marriage, his second wife goes to the hospital. She's like, "I think I'm pregnant." So she goes to the hospital, takes the test. It turns out positive. That same day, his first wife was having really, really bad stomach pains. Same day, she goes to the hospital. Guess what? She's pregnant too. He gets this news in the early afternoon, and while he is leaving from work, his boss fires him. And that's as much of the story as I was told. Because my friend was like, "Yeah, see, I'm not going to be that woman. I'm not going to prove to the man that I can conceive before he marries me."
Now, and let's point out that despite the extreme poverty that these people are living in, having children is such a big deal. Now, our friends are still trying to have children despite the fact that, like I said earlier, they're facing potential unemployment. It's really hard in Cameroon to find a job.
Yes. Well, and another thing that you didn't mention was that this last miscarriage was so hard on her body that she was hospitalized for several days, had to go back multiple times, and it could have potentially taken her life. There was a family that I grew up with who she became pregnant, and essentially it was her life or the child's life, and she chose to have the child, and she died. But my advice to this woman is that you can't put your own life in danger, especially when you already have a child who needs you.
Let's not pretend like this hasn't existed in American culture in the past, where you have to have a lot of children. Specifically, you have to have a son to carry on your name. and to pass on your family name and so forth. But there's a difference here. And the question that should be asked, because in Africa, there is extreme poverty. So the question is, should you keep having children knowing that they will be born into extreme poverty?
Well, it makes you wonder, how much are they able to provide? What type of a life are you able to provide for that child? But I don't think that comes into account for many people. We were recounting this story to a couple of friends. One is an African woman and another is an American woman. And both of them had the same response. Both of them said, you can afford as many children as you have. I understood the response coming from the African woman, whose culture tells her that she needs to have lots of children.
Right.
I did not understand the response coming from an American woman who herself worries about being able to provide college and medical care for her children that are now in their 20s.
I'm the exact opposite. I didn't understand the African perspective because she is here in Africa. She's from Africa. She has lived in Africa. She has seen the extreme poverty. And she herself is living a life of affluence. The American perspective, now I had to sleep on this one a little bit. Because in America, we hear that all the time. You know, you shouldn't keep having children if you're poor and you're making less than a certain amount. There's a difference between being poor in America and being poor in Africa. In Africa, there's no social services. There's no food stamps. There's no emergency medical care. There's no police force that will come to your house without you paying for them. There's none of that in Africa. There's no ambulance is going to come to your house if you get extremely, extremely sick, unless you're going to pay for it.
No, that your children exist. Will just die.
Yes, your children will die. In America, not so much, in most places anyway.
But
so there's a difference.
This brings me back to my...
There's no Salvation Army, right. You know?
But my grandfather is one of 14, and he grew up in the West on a farm. And part of the reason for having 14 children is that they kind of planned on some of those kids dying.
That sounds harsh.
I know. But the truth is, they have in this farm community where they're very poor, they have this mentality that the children are born to help you work the farm. They help you provide. And chances are one of them is going to die. Now, my grandfather was close to death several times. He got poked in the eye with a spike and was unable to see out of one eye. He had polio as a young child. He almost drowned in a canal. And only one of his siblings died at a young age. There is this mentality that, well, you keep having children because chances are they're going to die. And I think that in Africa, there's a similar mentality like that. On our last podcast, we talked about malaria and how it's estimated that nearly 1 million children die of malaria every year. You keep having children in hopes that 1 out of 3 of them is healthy, or in hopes that 2 out of 4 of them is healthy and lives a good, successful life.
And there is a similar motivation that we have not mentioned, and that is religion and faith. A lot of people feel like God will provide as many children as you are able to have, even with the risk of our friend who, as you mentioned, is risking her life to have other children.
And they are a very religious couple.
Right. We're in the precipice of having our second child, and I don't know if we should have a third because I want to be rich, or, you know, or there's the mentality, and some friends of mine from church have told me, no, you can afford as many as you can
have.
Well, they haven't seen my account. I mean, they haven't checked my account. No, but I mean, but in all seriousness, yes, we can afford to have multiple children. But in Africa, we make in 1 month what our help makes in 24 months. That's a big difference. And she has 4 children on 1/24 of our salary. Right. So there's a difference. I mean, so when you compare the two, there's really not a comparison to poverty in America and poverty in Africa. There's a huge difference.
There's a really big difference.
We'll take a break and we'll be right back. Dialogue.
Cameroon Traveler Magazine, your Cameroon travel, lifestyle, and leisure guide. CTM is Cameroon like you have never seen. Visit us at CameroonTraveler.com.
Okay, welcome back to the dialogue. If you have been following the news, you are probably already aware of the missing girls in Nigeria, and they were kidnapped by an organization called the Boko Haram. This organization has threatened to sell these girls. Some girls have escaped, but they've also killed more than 70 boys as well. They only recruit men, and literally, Boko Haram translates to mean Western education is a sin. A few months ago, I was with my daughter at a local church, and I ran into the U.S. military before all this happened in mid-April. And I asked him, "What are you doing here in Cameroon?" And he told me that he was here training some local Cameroonian military. And the first thing I thought was, training them for what? Subsequently, I found out that we've had a problem with this terrorist organization since about 2002. And some of the Boko Haram have even crept down from the Nigerian border into Cameroon.
In Waza, a town in the northern part of Cameroon, the Boko Haram attacked a Chinese working camp and killed 10 people. And according to a Nigerian newspaper, the president of Cameroon, Paul Biya, has since declared war on the Boko Haram. So I have two questions. One, if they are anti-Western education, why attack the Chinese workers there? And then two, what do you think Paul Biya's goal is in declaring war, and how does he even go about that?
This is just based on what I have read and my opinion. This is strictly conjecture, so take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, because the organization viewed them as a threat, and they could. And they were probably getting close to where their territory is. That's just my guess. There's an estimated 30,000 members of the Boko Haram. They're all male. They only recruit males. I think that number is way too low. I think it's more like 50,000 to 60,000. That's just, once again, that's just me speculating, and that's pure conjecture.
Well, of course they're all men, because if you're against Western education educates women, and you wouldn't want a woman to be educated, right?
Right, right. I mean, but this organization, they are sophisticated, they have guns, they have weaponry, and they're being funded by somebody. They have crept into Cameroon, and I've had people ask me, "Are you guys safe?"
Yes.
Now, I'm going to put this at a percentage. When this story first broke, I would have said at the time, I said the chances of them attacking our school, which is a Western educated school, is about 0.5%. I'm upping that to about 10%. Is it likely that they are going to attack our school in our area? No, it's not likely. Is it possible? Absolutely. With more than 30,000, and this is, once again, this is me guessing, I think they have close to 50,000. I don't think it's that low. Is it possible with Islamic fundamentalists? I want to stress it's fundamentalists. They're not really living the law of Islam. And we have 20% of Cameroon at least is Muslim. Is it possible that a Boko Haram member is living in Douala? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's possible.
I'm going to increase your estimate of 10% simply because of the name of our school. It says American. The name of the school that we work for is the American School of Douala. And if they're anti-Western education, then clearly anything that portrays itself or advertises that it is Western is going to have a higher risk of being attacked. I would put the Douala school probably at a lower percentage than the Yaounde school, because Yaounde is the capital, and they would get much more attention by attacking the school in Yaounde. And let's be honest, terrorists like attention. That's right. Why they attack, because they're bringing attention to their cause.
And they make videos, and they brag about what they've done.
Right.
I mean, so that's the pattern of terrorism that we've, right, that we've seen. To answer the second part of the question, now Paul Biya has declared war against Boko Haram. Now, once again, I think this is just smoke and mirrors. The Cameroonian military is not strong. The Nigerian military is not strong. They rely on a lot of help from the French and the Americans, as we have subsequently found out. Paul Biya does not live in Cameroon. He comes and visits here. He resides in France, and he resides in Switzerland, and who knows where else.
Well, the president of France, Holland, has actually addressed this particular issue and issued a statement that Boko Haram won't get away with this, that we will send aid to these countries that are suffering attacks from this terrorist organization. So I'm not sure how much Paul Biya has influenced that. I'm not particularly a fan of the man, so I'm going to say probably not a whole lot. And that the French interest in Cameroon particularly is quite significant. They have very large corporations that do business in the country. So that's what the French are protecting.
I'm also going to say this, something that kind of surprised me. A lot of Cameroonians had not heard about this story. It wasn't reported as strongly as it should have been. Part of the Boko Haram is in along the border of, because Cameroon and Nigeria border one another, and part of the Boko Haram is believed to have crossed into Cameroon. Now, a lot of people say, why can't we just go in there and get them? Well, because of the terrain and because of the landscape and because of it's jungly, it's foresty, it's hard to go in there. If we were to send the military in there, we may lose more lives than we save. So it may not be the wisest idea. The Nigerian government is trying to strike a deal with the Boko Haram, and it's a mess.
Well, let's be honest and pessimistic here. Governments are about protecting their interest, and their interests aren't in little villages.
Correct.
Their interests are in major cities, and those major cities are Douala and Yaoundé. Douala is the economic power of the country, so that's what they will protect first. But they're not going to go in and protect a tiny village when it's not in their best interest and could potentially lose more than they gain, in their opinion.
On that note, we will be right back to talk about the presidency of Paul Biya with our friend Patrick. Dialogue.
If I was president, uh-huh. I'd get elected on Friday, yeah. Assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, yeah. They go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah.
Okay, welcome back to the dialogue. Today we have Mr. Patrick here. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the dialogue. Patrick, you grew up here, you're from Cameroon. And you and I were talking earlier, and I just want to continue our discussion. So many people here in Cameroon have told us that the president, Paul Biya, has kept them safe. Besides keeping the people safe, what do you feel his other job responsibilities are?
I think that besides keeping the people of the country safe, he has as an obligation, as he promised before he was put in power, to create jobs, to create maybe a good educational system, create more universities, probably technical universities where youths can actually come out with hands-on skills to be able to sustain themselves or carry out activities that can sustain themselves.
He made an oath to make things better for the Cameroonians as far as getting jobs. Do you feel like he's done a good job of that?
I think I can grade him on a grade point of 10. I think so far I can give him a 6 on 10 because I'm giving him a 6 on 10 from a superficial view, and I have the conception that he has some policies that he is trying to enforce, but along the way, he cannot do everything by himself. Along the way, his subordinates too are not putting things in order, which is also a problem. So I'm giving him a 6 on 10 for some of the initiatives that he is bringing. But the other four, I think that he is it is his duty to implement a control, an effective control system, to make sure that things that are brought up are actually enforced to the benefit of it.
Well, let me just ask you that. He's been in power for more than 30 years.
Yeah.
So do you feel like things, if they haven't gotten better in 30 years, do you think it's him or do you think it's the system that he is controlling?
I think it's more of the system that he is controlling.
Well, if he's the president, do you feel like he can change? Doesn't he have the power to change the system?
He has the power to change the system, actually. So the first complaint, the first problem, or the first finger is being pointed to him. Mm-hmm. I think we have to give him the first accusation. But we also have to look at the mentality of the people. because if the mentality of he is a single individual like any other person, if the mentality of the people is maybe changed, I think we can improve the country together.
One thing that I'm curious about, how do you feel about him living outside of the country of Cameroon?
Well, that is actually a problem because there is a regulation that he is not supposed to be out of the country for more than 30 days, if I'm not mistaken, but he has been more than, out of the country for more than 30 days in certain instances. And in that case, I think he is overruling the law, because when he came back, nothing was done. So it's some kind of autocracy, not democracy as it is being painted to the outside world.
With unemployment at approximately 70 to 80%, what is it going to take for Cameroon to improve its economy?
If you look at most, in the Western world, most economies that are strong are based on technology. So I think if we reorient our educational system towards technology, it will help develop the country so much. Because to start with, Cameroon is termed Africa in miniature. We have a lot of natural resources. We are a very rich country in terms of natural resources. But the problem is those resources are not exploited well. And secondly, we don't believe in ourselves. So I think that the problem of Cameroonians is Cameroonians. Because, for example, a job that can be executed by a Cameroonian, he may be paid, let's say, 10,000. But if it's some other person who is not from Cameroon executing that same job, that person may be paid 100,000.
So do you feel that Cameroonians are not demanding to be treated equally when it comes to the workforce?
They are actually demanding to be treated equally, but it's the mentality of the people above. Because sometimes, for the fact that you don't have anything doing, and you know that you have to be paid this amount, you just have to go for what is being offered. So it's because of the desperate nature. But I want to think that because there was a belief in the country, in the most communities, that it is those who are not that intelligent who go to the technical schools. But that mentality has to be changed, because it has been seen, or it has been proven from the Western economy, that most economies that are very strong depend more on technology.
Now, if I heard you correctly, you said that people accept low wages because they're desperate.
Yeah.
But why are they desperate? If the president has been in charge for more than 30 years and it's his job to help people get trained and educated, do you feel like things are improving?
Relatively, I will not give him much credit, because looking at the resources that we have, the country was supposed to have been far more better than this. I want to believe that if the country was actually run well, the per capita income for people living in Cameroon should have doubled, why not tripled? And I want to also believe that the orientation of education more towards general education is actually a weakness. And for example, we don't have a full-fledged technical university where people can come out from the university and they are able to create things that can sell in our local market. Yeah.
Why hasn't the president done those things that will improve the country? Why hasn't he done those things?
Well, I'm not sure, because I think he has advisors. He, from his history, I grew up from the masses, so I know what the local people need. I know what they don't have. And though my parents were rich, but I preferred experiencing life with the masses. So I know the needs of the common man. I know what can be done to improve the society, the common society. But he, from history, he grew up in affluence. So he does not know, I don't think he has a good knowledge of what the common man really need, because you never see the president in a local community to see what is going on in that local community, unlike in other countries.
What would it take to get a common man, somebody who knows the needs of the people in power?
Looking up at our political system, I must say it's a very complicated system where those who are engaged in politics run the risk of being killed, run the risk of being imprisoned because of their ideas. So it's not only democracy, it has to be maybe something beyond my reasoning.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Uganda, Kenya, Cameroon, Sudan, Zambia, Togo, Africa. Many things
they happen for my country. All my food is about them daily. Paul Biya has been the president of Cameroon since 1982. During this time, he has had his political opponents thrown in jail, journalists detained and killed, and churches shut down for dissenting points of view. In 2011, he conveniently removed presidential term limits from Cameroon's constitution. And in 2008, he had at least 139 people killed, mostly adolescents, for protesting. His first wife, Jeanne Irene Biya, who opposed Biya's policies, mysteriously died in 1992, and no one knows exactly how she died. Now, many Cameroonians have told me that the infrastructure of the country has slowly gotten worse, not better. Paul Biya's net worth is more than $200 million, while the minimum wage in Cameroon is less than $60 a month. So why are so many Cameroonians claiming that he's a good president or that he's keeping them safe?
Well, I think that there are two reasons for this. The first is that this is what they're being told. They don't really have a lot of options when it comes to news outlets. And so they're being fed the information that they are safe, they're well provided for, Mr. Biya is a good president. And they don't have a juxtaposition, they don't have an opposing point of view, they don't have anyone really telling them otherwise. What they're hearing is, oh, but it's so much worse in other countries. It's worse in Nigeria. It's worse in the Congo, where they're killing each other. We don't have any of that. We don't have any killing on the street. So therefore, we are safe because there's no civil unrest, which means that Paul Biya is a good president. I think the second part of this is that we're foreigners and they want us to think well of them, not only on an economic level, but on a personal level. They feel that Mr. Biya, the president, represents them as a Cameroonian. This is the Cameroonian that we as a foreigner know of, and so therefore he represents them individually. And if we think well of the president, we think well of them. And the opposite is true in many of our minds also. Well, if you don't think well of the president, what must you think of me? And I think in general, people tend to do this. We look to somebody who we feel represents us. If somebody is talking badly about that person, we defend that person.
Yeah, and in the same way that the Queen of England represents the people of England, or
right.
The Prince or Kate Middleton represents, for some reason, internally, they think, oh, this person, even though they're living lavishly,
right.
Okay. They're living lavishly. Somehow they represent
us. Not related to me at all.
Absolutely. Right. And I kind of feel that way about Paul Biya. And I had to think about it because they are living in extreme poverty, but yet they're still defending this man because, like it or not, he represents Cameroon. And now we'd like to read some of your Facebook responses.
We asked the question, if you are living in extreme poverty, should you keep having children? Rachel Michelle Webb writes, it's a personal decision that every family needs to pray about. Every family is different. In some cases, it might be the 10th child that changes the world or gets the family out of poverty. Not in my family, though. 4 is enough.
Deb writes, is it about money, being able to financially provide, or desire, wanting more children? I often wonder if children are born due to not having access to money or to birth control.
I think that tends to be specific toward the Western developed world.
Right.
In Cameroon,
not so much.
There's a huge culture that says having children makes you a woman, having children makes you a man, and they really want to be able to give birth to a child.
Julianne Lamb writes, I think even if you don't live in poverty, you shouldn't keep having kids. The world is full of kids that don't have homes, so adopt. In the older days, my grandmother told me that they have kids to help them on farms. I don't see kids with the same responsibilities as back then, and I don't think having children as a way to as hired help is a reason to keep having kids. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But she said something that I hadn't thought about before. She said, well, don't keep having kids because there's plenty of kids out there who don't have homes. So I never thought of it from that point of view.
And I liked the farm comment because that reminded me of my own grandpa.
What we talked about earlier.
Which we talked about earlier.
Thank you so much for your comments. And please, if you have any other questions, please remember you can email us at askdialogueoverseas@gmail.com. All right. Thank you so much. And we are out. See you next time.
Bye.
Held a sneaking admiration for this one.
He was the best of the tyrants and the most dangerous. They were Superman in a sense. Stronger, braver, certainly more ambitious, more daring.
Gentlemen, this romanticism about a ruthless dictator is...
But Spock, we humans have a streak of barbarism in us. Appalling, but there, nevertheless.
There were no massacres under his rule.
And as little freedom. No wars until he was attacked. Gentlemen...
We can be against him and admire him all at the same time.
Illogical.
Thank you for listening to the Dialogue Overseas podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes under the podcast section, join the discussion on Facebook / Dialogue Overseas, and you can follow us on Twitter.